Okay, I'm also a 1970s war gamer. I met someone from my school in Canterbury who was 10 years younger than me and discovered that they still were running a war game society that me and a friend had set up so we could avoid having to go and play games out and wet winter afternoons. So I thought at least I'd achieved something at this school. Okay, so this is a project. This is an art project that I was involved with. I teach politics at the University of Westminster. About 10 years ago, we set up this group. It's sort of artists, academics, activists. As you can see, we have no problem being left-wingers who like war games. There's a film over here which was sponsored by the Arts Council, 20 minutes. It's sort of tongue-in-cheek, I have to hasten to add. Is this the mouse? Right, okay. Okay, so what we did in this project is basically, it's an art, let me see if we can get that. Ah, good, here we are. Right, okay, so we're an art group. We've mainly done exhibitions. We've been in places like the Hermitage in St. Petersburg, the Victorian Albert Museum, all sorts of places, all over the place. Salute, there, yeah, we've made it. I'll just show you, just give you an idea. What we've been primarily doing is looking at a game which was invented by a guy called Guy Debord. He was one of the founders of the Situationist International. This was an art group which became basically a political group in the 1960s. He wrote a book called Society of the Spectacle, which many people see as the manifesto of the May 1968 revolution. Probably none of you have heard of this. It's very influential on left-wing politics and also in the art world. If you go to the Tate Modern and they have this big timeline of all the radical art movements, his name is up there. So this is really what he did. He designed this particular group. If we can go, how go back in here? Oh, how do you go back? Okay, I'm going back on this one. I'm trying to see if I can find it. So what we've done is we were interested in this because it's a war game. So you have to understand that we people have talked here about how weird war gaming is, how it's gender bias or whatever. So what we were interested in is the fact that this is a guy who's known as a left winger, he's a council communist, and as a radical avant-garde artist. But he was obsessed with war games. I met his first wife, and she used to say, I get used to give toy soldiers to Guy, boys will be boys. And in his life, he actually said making this war game was his most important ever project. So he's very famous, a film director as well. And so we thought, this is interesting, let's explore this. We found a set of rules in the back of somebody's biography, and we built this game. And so I'll just show you, this is the man himself somewhere here. We can pull this up. Okay. Why is it not working?
It's coming up as a separate tab.
It's coming up as a separate tab, is it? No, that's something else. I want to pull the game up. Oh, here we are. Right, okay, so this is the guy, Guy Debord. This is his second wife, Alice Becker Ho. And he spent, after May 68, the French secret police told him that it would be a very good idea if he left Paris, since he'd almost overthrown the French government. So he retired to the Auvergne, where he actually made this game. He'd been practicing. And so what we were interested about is that he also set up a publishing house called Champ Libre. And it's it has lots of radical left-wing publications, but it's also got lots of military history in it. Charles Napier's account of the Peninsula campaign. He also translated, he also had a new translation made of Karl von Clausewitz on War into French, and he republished a lot of his campaign histories, which actually aren't available in English, but I've read them in his editions, which is very interesting. So what he wanted to do in this game, which is an abstract game, as you saw from these, if you looked at these other ones here, that one, as you can see here, it's an abstract game here, is to teach the principles that he saw were in On War. So there are five principles he saw. Coup d'oeil, that is, you know, look at the back. I don't have to tell people here what a coup d'oeil is. Actually, the first. Psyching the opponent, concentration of forces, outflanking the enemy, and hot pursuit. So he saw these as five principles that were embedded in this game. So the idea he had is in May 68, the students and the workers had taken on the French establishment and in a general strike, almost overthrown it, but they'd been outmaneuvered by a general called de Gaulle. So he wanted to teach these military principles to radical lefties, or complete opposites of the Greens up in Scotland. He thought that left should learn these lessons. And his idea was that we'd all sit around in our bars and clubs and political meetings playing his war game so that next time there was a revolution, we'd know how to beat the generals. Great idea. We think this is... The film is a sort of slightly tongue-in-cheek explanation of what this means, looking at it. Okay, so this is one side of it. So, as I said, we've toured this all over the place, all over Europe, Russia, Brazil. We've been in art exhibitions and, you know, and so on and so forth. Okay, so that was one side. So we actually did... So, as I said, I have to say, slightly ironically, say, well, this is what we're doing. We're teaching Klaus von Clausewitz's On War to lefties. What we also then thought is it would be really interesting is to then apply this in the classroom. So I said, I teach politics, and I was asked about 5-6 years ago, they said, well, we want to do something new. Let's do something new. And I said, well, look, I'm involved in this art project. Let's try, and we're playing not just Guy Debord's On War, we're doing Command and Colours Napoleonics. We did a Haitian Revolution hack of this. Because if you notice in the initial front page of the class war games, there's a painting of Toussaint Louverture, which is the front of my book. We did H.G. Wells' Little Wars. It was great getting adults to lie on the floor and fire matchsticks and toy cannons at metal soldiers. That's really great. And Reds versus Reds. This is the one we did for the Hermitage in St. Petersburg, which is Social Democrats versus Bolsheviks. Not Reds versus Whites, but the left fighting each other. It loves doing that. Okay, so we thought this is a great idea. So we've done these other games. So I've put together a module for this particular... Oh, here we are, Wikiversity. Right, okay, so what we did is, as you always have to do, you can go to the link and it shows you what we were doing. So what we did is, this is obviously a few years, 4 years ago. What we did is we had sessions where we had lecture, just about the general history of wargaming and principles you can learn from it, why should we do simulations, this sort of thing. And then we got them to play a game, and we did it doesn't actually say here, but as you saw from the previous, we did things like Kingmaker, election games, Command and Colours, these sort of things, just to give them lots of different types of games. Political games, and Brian Train's Red Guard. This was a really popular game among students because you have the different factions. Some of them are doing Chinese politics. So you have the different factions in the Cultural Revolution. They're all biased in different ways between the number of military Red Guards and cadre they have. And they go around seizing the Red Pigeon bicycle factory and the Commune of Eternal Sunshine or whatever. Yeah. So there are different types of games. And then what we said to them, the key thing was, let's go and make a game. And I think this is the key thing, maybe more than the is that we thought, right, what's really interesting is your politics students. The big problem you have as a politics student is, unlike when I've taught at media schools, you've taught at your media school, you say, I talk about the internet to them, go and make a website, go and make some social media. Yeah? You can't in politics go and say, go and get yourself elected. Well, actually, I do have a Labour councillor in my first year, but that's quite different. Or go and organise an armed revolution. Well, we have had actually students who went off to fight for the PKK against the Wahhabi head shoppers in Syria, but they did that after graduation. One of them is actually in Raqqa at the moment. Make a game. So what we did is get them to make games. And I want to, let me get back here. So as you can see with the stroke, here they are making the game. The previous picture was a one based on drone striking, right? It was a sort of whack-a-mole game where if you hit civilians, the guerrillas got bigger and bigger. And actually that was quite a good lesson actually to show, because drones all sound wonderful on paper, don't they? But once you actually start applying them in the field, they can actually be counterproductive. That was quite, here's them all sort of making things. So one of the key ones, and I just want to flag out, it actually almost got produced, but the trouble was that the couple who were producing it fell out with each other. Which is all. This is a sort of resources game. This is one. It's called Imperialism in Space. They were taught. Lenin wrote this pamphlet just over 100 years ago called "Imperialism: The Highest Stage of Capitalism." Not a very good prediction, and it's not actually very good for various reasons. You can criticise it if you've read lots of Marx on its theoretical basis, but it's incredibly influential. It basically says reason why we have wars is because capitalists want to seize colonies and exploit them and take their markets. I mean, obviously there are much more other complicated reasons, but you know, he wrote it in the middle of the First World War, and it was written very quickly. The problem is, if you want to model this particular theory of imperialism and you use the First World War, as anyone would know from playing diplomacy, is it's unbalanced. That you have this problem that Germany is in the centre and always loses a two-front war. Yeah. So what they had is a really brilliant idea of actually doing it as a space game. Because what you could do then, if we go through this, it shows you the hex, is that they were actually three, they abstracted it into six sides, because they were large class of students, and they had these tiles that you put down, which randomly created the terrain, and basically, okay, so it was always different when you played it, but what it did do is make sure that they were all basically could start off roughly the same, right? So you didn't have this problem of the geography of Europe. Oh, I've played many First World War games, and I said I don't think the Germans ever win unless you give them too much. Germans should never start wars in Europe. You're going to lose. So this is a very good idea, because what they did, and this is what they learned from the De Boer game, is taking the principles of the theory and applying it to creating a game. So it wasn't like a realistic game. What it was doing was showing people what the theory is. And the theory, actually, the way you won the game was, I think, absolute genius. Is that what you have to do, in Lenin's theory, capitalism over-accumulates, and it has to flow out into the colonies. And what you did is, so all the players are competing to basically get all their capital out. Instead of increasing the living standards of the working class at home, you go abroad and exploit more people. And of course, what happens, it's like a game where you're continually accumulating human capital, and eventually you collapse because you can't expand your empire quickly enough, or you get caught, you basically get blocked by other empires. And so the winner is the last capitalist standing, because one after the other, all the other players have a proletarian revolution and achieve communism or utopia, according to Lenin's theory, and you have to be the last one standing. So it's actually the game mechanics was really brilliant about a way it illustrated this particular idea. I said, unfortunately, they've got to the playtesting stage. They started taking out to game testing clubs, and then they basically fell out with each other. So that's all. Love managed to sabotage capitalism in this case, or lack of it. Since then, just to conclude, which I don't have illustrated. Oh, look, there was Red Guard. There you are. This was run for a few years, and then we had something called Learning Futures. And so what they said in the university, this is neoliberal university, let's reorganise. You know, every few years they reorganise everything, and then eventually you end up back where you started again. But hey, kept the managers in luxury for a few more years. The idea was to put together people from different departments. So we already, somebody did a riot, a London 2011 riot game, which the computer science people turned. It was actually a very good game. Again, illustrating political points rather than just, you know, rioters and police hitting each other. So we did this last year. We tried this out where we had politics students who basically made the game concept and used board game design. Computer scientists who then took over and did the actual coding, and graphic designers. Very difficult to accomplish. What was interesting is I think it was much more successful as a board game only module. I very much agree with the previous people, the whole physicality, and it's much easier to alter and modify a board game. And so that was actually a problem. It actually didn't really work, and I'm not sure whether they're even going to run this thing again, because it fell to pieces because there were too many groups involved. It was much easier when it was said, well, you know, you have 3-6 weeks, make a board game. And it works. And I'm sure that Phil must have the same thing here. It was, you know, if one thing that looked good on paper. On that project, most of them weren't that good either, except the one thing that really did come out of this project, and I, as I said, unfortunately, I was trying to find if there was anything online, is there was an Egyptian student on the course, and she made a name about you were a refugee going from Aleppo to London. And it originally was a sort of race game. But they made it turned into a computer game where you go through, and it's just to give people, that worked as a computer game because it gave you the first person experience of what refugees go through. You know, not those, you know, the evil migrant to stealing our benefits on the front covers of the Tory papers, but it actually was very good because it created empathy. So I think that was actually the only one that was really successful. This one, as I said, was much better. There were some very good election games and so on and so on. But I think this is one of our favourites, Comrade Cobra, where you can purge, it's Stalin's purges. Everybody's evil, so you have no compunction about killing any of them. Yeah. So you just get rid of his Politburo one after the other. Yeah, I've finished. Okay, so just to conclude, as I said, this is from students. It works because it's a way of allowing politics students to turn their theoretical ideas into something practical, and it works much better on paper than using computers.
Right, thank you.